Live from Auburn, the sports capital of Alabama, this is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome in. It is the Tuesday edition of The Drive. Man, the sun has come out here in the last hour. It's been sort of overcast all day, sort of, you know, just looking, looking more like a Monday. But it's Tuesday, and things have brightened up. And we are here with you on the Tuesday edition of The Drive. Bill and Dan here in the studio. We will check in with Andy Burcham. He said he will. He's at shoot-around right now, and he'll text us when he can go, but he will be on with us today. Going to be an abbreviated edition of The Drive today because of back-to-back baseball and basketball. Normally, Auburn baseball and men's basketball is on Wings 94.3, but with the 6 o'clock first pitch in baseball and then the 9 o'clock scheduled tip for basketball, to avoid any, you know, overlap or having to, you know, switch where you could hear the broadcast, the baseball game is going to be right here on ESPN 106.7, and the airtime will be 5:45, so we'll be off a little early today. But until then,
What are you looking for tonight out of the baseball team before we get into basketball? I think it would surprise some folks. I was asking you guys yesterday. It's like, I don't think that many folks realize you're about to start conference play.
Yeah.
Feels like the baseball season just started. You're starting that gauntlet of SEC teams tomorrow. I think any reps for guys that are trying to fight for – how about this? Where is there still competition before Butch sets the first lineup of SEC play?
Ooh, I think it could change. I think the left side of the infield Eric Guevara going to play third? Is he going to play short? And
he's probably going to play.
Oh, he's going to play. He is going to play. If he is physically able, he will be in the lineup, and he will be on the left side of the infield. But who will be his partner, and will they be to his left or to his right?
And the competition involves
that. The competition involves, I mean, right now, Brandon McCrain is playing a lot of third.
One of the McCrain brothers, the freshman we talked about a little bit yesterday.
He's the redshirt freshman. Brandon is been playing a lot of third. Todd Clay started out the season as your primary third baseman. So I mean, you've got a couple
or
of guys.
Or Guevara could move over to third, right? And you could have some of the shortstop options.
Oh yeah. So I mean, you've got the left side of the infield. I mean, who's your first baseman? Is it? I mean, you've got some really good choices, but I mean, Ethan Bingaman has been playing first. Todd has played some first.
Bingaman's been swinging the bat really well,
I mean,
right?
Yeah. Lucas Steele, when you know, can play first. He can play the outfield. Chase Frelick is going to be your catcher, but he's not going to catch. He may not catch every single game.
If you're talking about the McCrain brothers, or if you're talking about Brandon and Ethan Bingaman as guys who are going to get a primary number of reps at an infield spot. Think about who could be back now. Look, I know you've still got an SEC slate to play.
Yeah.
But you could be talking about, like, an infield full of underclassmen, right? Like, you could be talking about an infield full of guys who have
– You have a lot of very exciting freshmen and sophomores on this roster. There's no question about that. Ryan Farber is the other guy on the left side of the infield. He was your shortstop opening the season with Guevara at third. That's another guy there in the mix on the left side of the infield, in the outfield. You know that Bub Terrell is your left fielder. He can also play right. Bristol Carter has really gotten off to a good start, and he has been in center. So that means in right field, Mason McCrain, who has just been on fire, is out there. You've got Cade Ballou also. I mean, so you've got – You've got
is Mason a DH option if he's not one of the three if he's not one of the three outfielders or who, because there's another spot you can find.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah. You're right. I mean, the thing is the way he swings the bat. Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, he's the all those guys are really good outfielders though. I mean, so you're going to have a good defensive outfield regardless.
I just wonder if, I mean, and again, having not seen a ton of Mason's defensive work in the outfield, I would wonder that if...
Man,
if
he looks like a right field. I mean, he's 6'6", can run, and has a very strong arm. Strong enough that he can pitch as well.
But I'm thinking, I mean, with Bristol and Bubb and potentially Cade Ballou as your outfield, you're talking about an outfield that can cover an insane amount of ground.
You haven't seen Mason move.
I haven't seen Mason move. But I would just assume that between the two.
That is four really, really talented defensive outfielders.
Is there somebody right now tabbed for a ton of DH at bats?
It's sort of been back and forth. That's another spot. I mean, Logan Gregorio has had some at bats there. Lucas has.
I guess you could try Bingham in there if you like someone else at first base. You know, if you wanted to get Jake into the lineup, or if you wanted to. Just first thing that came to mind describing that lineup, Bill, would be depending on what you know. And again, I guess you could play matchups too. But the thought of Cade as your right fielder and McCrane as your DH seems really tantalizing because of what that would mean athletically for your outfield. If it went the other way, Cade would have some competition for those DH reps, right?
Oh, yeah, no question. Well, another guy that we haven't seen yet that's coming back from preseason injury is a guy that was the talk of the start of fall camp, Eddie Madrigal. The biggest power threat early in fall camp, and he's on schedule to be back before too long, with conference play getting started next weekend. So it's a very interesting situation. I mean, it's exactly what Butch Thompson had said, that he feels like they've got 13 or 14 guys, and again, they're going to sort of make the lineup right now. I mean, we didn't see Todd or Cade really over the weekend, because the McCrane brothers are swinging the bat so well you don't want to pull somebody when they're on a hot streak like these guys are right now. So they're going to get opportunities. All of them are going to get opportunities, but, you know, it'll be up to them to cash in and take advantage of those opportunities if they want to get back in or stay in the lineup.
Yeah, really interested to see what they tinker with between now and it's Vanderbilt, right? Is your SEC opener? Is Vandy the first? For some reason, I thought that was right. Maybe I'm getting the.
It may be. You know, I haven't really even looked ahead to see. I know that you've got Texas and Arkansas coming really soon. I was thinking it was Missouri. No, it's Missouri.
It's Missouri.
Missouri. I haven't looked at the schedule. I just had to remember for a second.
It's on the road.
It's at Missouri.
And
then you got Arkansas, right?
Then you got Texas.
Then you've got Texas coming to town.
Yeah,
right.
It's Missouri, Texas, Alabama to close out the month, and then it's all conference games when you get into April. Those first three are huge, though. You can play your way into dire straits in the first 3 weeks of conference play. That's what Auburn did 2 years ago. You can assert yourself as a competitor, as a contender in the first in the first 3 weeks of SEC play, if you get out to a fast enough start, and with Missouri and Alabama on the road to begin league play, sandwiched in between that Texas series is in between, it's important for Auburn to be. You don't have a runway. You don't have a chance to ease into SEC play. I mean, I guess at Missouri, you are going on the road against a team.
Yeah, and Missouri is a team that's expected to be near the bottom.
But the fact that it's on the road,
mm-hmm.
and the fact that it comes right before you come home and play a national championship contender like Texas, think about how big it would be for Missouri to start SEC play with a win over Auburn, a series win over Auburn. So yeah, it's important for Auburn to be on its A game when league play starts, and tonight is an opportunity to get some more reps, get some more data about who needs to be out there when you start league play.
Yeah, I mean, it'll be interesting to see who is DHing tonight, and who, you know, exactly how the lineup shakes up, but we can shakes out. We can look at it here, I'm sure, pretty shortly if it's not already been posted. And then, you know, Andreas Alvarez going to be on the mound again. I thought he looked better in his second start. First start looked like he was almost overthrowing a little bit. Looked better, and we'll see who comes in behind him as Auburn's still trying to find, you know, exactly who's going to fit in one slot. With it being Tuesday night and you've got a couple of more days before you play, I wouldn't be shocked to see Auburn's closers, who both struggled in the Friday night game against Nebraska, Garrett Brewer and Ryan Hetzler, get an opportunity to throw an inning or so tonight as well. So it's Samford, and this game always means a ton to Samford because this is one of those games where, you know, if they can knock off an SEC team, especially an in-state school, that's a huge, you know, prize for them. So so it should be fun. Looks like weather's going to be just fine over at Plainsman Park for the matchup tonight.
Oh, it's perfect out today, right? I mean, you got some fantastic. You know, it sounds like you're talking a lot of hot and dry weather between now and the end of the semester, mm-hmm. which is good news for the baseball team. Could get old for folks, you know, walking to class, but I think, you know, right now you just had some amazing weather.
Yeah, well, next week's spring break, so that's what you want is warm weather, and it looks like it's going to cooperate.
Yeah, and speaking of which, I will be in Pensacola. I'm missing the show on Friday. Potentially missing the show on Monday.
You're missing the show Monday.
Yeah, well, you know,
for one particular reason.
With Troy, yeah, with Troy in both the women's, and I may help out a little bit with Barry and the men's call. We'll see, you know, if they can put me to some work down there with Troy Sports Media Network. I know I'm handling the women's call in game two.
Sure,
but it's yeah, we'll see what happens Sunday, and maybe I'm still down there and calling a championship game on Monday. I'm always look forward to my trip to Pensacola every year. The tournament's great. Just saw a little bit of the opening round action there on ESPN Plus right now. Arena looks fantastic. The new floor with the updated Sunbelt logos and some of the mm-hmm. Pensacola branding. The Air Force Reserve is part of the sponsorship group presenting the tournament now, so they've got some branding on the floor as well.
Did you see the floor for the Big 12 tournament?
I have not seen the floor for the Big 12 tournament. I'm going to look
glass,
that up.
It's glass with lighting and all kinds of everything underneath. It's Central Florida. I think it's from Orlando, but they're where's the Big 12 tournament? Is it in is it there in Orlando is it KC?
They're breaking out the glass floor. It is in.
I was thinking it's in Kansas City.
Let me see if I can find
But anyway, it is really cool. I mean, with the lighting and everything they can do with the floor, they can. I mean, it can look like a regular court. I was saw that. I just saw it posted on social media a little earlier today. It's really cool.
Yeah, Kansas City is the host of the women's tournament. I don't know if they host them both. Yeah, the ASB glass floor. It's been used in all-star games. I've seen clips of, like, Euro tournaments.
Yeah, it's used in Europe. Yeah. This is something. It's the first time it's going to be used in competition for an NCAA, you know, game.
So they also, on top of the benefit of, like, you know, you can do court designs and you can do games for fans during timeouts, mm-hmm. it also can show shot charts. It can show animations where they recreate plays and show you, oh, this player moved here.
Oh yeah,
this
yeah. Like, you draw on it. That's right. Yeah. I saw some of that as well.
No, that's cool. And probably, I would guess, the future of basketball floors, as opposed to
you see some
really crazy paint designs, right?
Oh, you do.
I mean, especially like when the NBA breaks out the you know the in season tournament, right, mm-hmm. and stuff like it's like ooh boy.
Well, it's also supposedly a little spongier. It's because of the layers that are all involved. It's supposed to be a little easier on the knees and joints. So that'll be something cool to watch. I mean, it's great to watch postseason yeah. basketball anyway, anywhere. But that'll be something to just sort of keep an eye on as well. I'm sure you will notice it during March Madness.
Yeah, if you get the opportunity, again, depending on where you are, you know, it may not be all that local to you, but if you ever get the opportunity to go see some postseason basketball, whether it's conference tournaments or the NCAA tournament, it is so much fun, mm-hmm. and you don't necessarily – like, it's more fun when your team is involved, but just seeing the – you know, pick a section, pick a color, and choose which team you're rooting for, and you can get into – a lot of the excitement and the do or die nature, the urgency of this time of year for college basketball teams, and I think you really see some high level stuff, and this is it's one of the best times of the year, I think, to be a sports fan. Even understanding that there's absolutely no football, you know, that's something that I think folks would say, like, what do you mean it's the best time of year to be a sports fan? There's not a single football game of consequence that you're gonna watch, and it's like, well, but there's still just tremendous men's and women's college basketball, and feels like the deeper we get into March, the more it feels like it's all day, right? Like the more you get into when you get into conference tournaments and things like that, you have options from 10 a.m. to 10 p.m. if you want to watch some high stakes college basketball, and that's a great feeling. And speaking of high stakes college basketball, there will be some at Neville Arena tonight, Bill.
I mean, it may not be the stakes that a lot of people had thought, but I mean, if Auburn is to, you know, if they're to keep any hope, I think, alive for an NCAA tournament bid, they can't lose tonight. I can't see a way except winning the SEC tournament that a loss tonight would not knock Auburn out.
Yeah, you have cruised through Bubble Town. And now you are on the outer limits.
Oh, you are. You are right now. You're out on the outside looking in.
And I would say you are on a train headed the wrong direction. And if you want to continue to be able to see the lights of Bubble Town, you probably need to get off that train and start walking a little bit closer to the cut line.
Yeah, and it starts with an LSU team that has, I mean, they've continued to compete. They just beat Ole Miss last week. Now they lost handily at home the other night to Oklahoma. So, I mean, look, both these teams are struggling. I think LSU's lost 6 out of 7 or 7 out of 8. Auburn has lost 7 of 8. So the month of February was not kind to either team. But they both come in 15-14, and LSU would love to knock off an Auburn team that thought they were postseason bound, up until this past week.
And I wonder if it's if there's no changing the minds of the jury when it comes to Coach McMahon. Like I don't know exactly what the mood is at LSU as far as making a change. It's been, I mean, his conference record's pretty terrible, right? I mean, you get into, like, since he arrived, I think he's 30 or 35 games under 500 in the SEC. They've been a non-factor in SEC play pretty much every season since he got there. And Will Wade is winning, although he got absolutely his doors.
Oh my!
Doors blown off.
I couldn't keep it on.
It was like a Tyson fight. It was over.
It was over after five minutes. Getting worse and worse and worse.
It was like one of those 90s Tyson fights, Bill. Like you sat down and you watched it, and
it's five. Like, stop it! Throw in the towel. Really.
Five minutes in, you knew it's like, oh, okay. One of these teams is going to just absolutely throttle the other. But even look, regardless of how Will Wade's doing, I think for all three of the SEC teams that are, well, I guess you have the Mississippi schools too, but I don't think there's going to be a change there. But for the three that were sort of like expected to be near the bottom, and that's where they've been all season long, when you talk about LSU and South Carolina and Oklahoma, I do sort of wonder, like, I mean, this is what you expected probably going into the season, but those expectations are also, you know, they're awfully low for all three of those programs, and I wonder if we're approaching the end for any of those three coaches at their respective schools, especially with all three of them.
I'd say the likelihood is it's much more likely that there are no changes there in those jobs than there is a change.
What do you mean?
Yeah, I'd say I'd be surprised if at least one of those schools didn't make a change.
Yeah, you would think that all
I'd
three of those guys
are. I'd be very surprised.
Yeah. Yes. And I mean, I don't know what McMahon's status is.
I don't know.
But I would say he might be it would be tough to rank the hottest seat between Paris and Moser and McMahon at those three schools.
Yeah, I agree.
But I would think all three of them are in real trouble after the way the seasons have gone for all three of those places. Maybe Matt McMahon can help himself considerably with a road win the last week of the season at Auburn, especially an Auburn team that's on the bubble, although a lot of teams have found ways to beat this Auburn team of late, so maybe it won't be as impactful as it would have been in previous years. But, yeah, I've seen all three of those schools from the SEC mentioned on lists of places that could be making a change this offseason.
I wonder how comfortable Chris Beard's seat is in Oxford.
You know, it's a disappointing year. They did go to the Sweet 16 last year, which so many SEC teams did that I think some folks forget.
No, that's true.
Ole Miss was within a few minutes of being Auburn's opponent in the Elite Eight.
That's right.
Last year, like they almost made a historically deep run for their program. I raised that question earlier this year. As far as like he's probably appreciative of the fact that he was able to make that run last year, because I do wonder if they'd been bounced early last year, I wonder if his overall body of work would be unsatisfactory to this point for Ole Miss. I think as it stands now, he at least can point to a deep tournament run recently and argue that he gets one more season. But I would think there's pressure on Chris Beard to.
Yeah, it's another one where next year will be very, very important for him.
Yeah, I would think Jans and Beard both have to show that things are going in the right direction at their respective programs
next year
in Mississippi.
And as we've talked for a while, so does Stephen Pearl.
Sure. Well, and when we talk about Porter Moser and Lamont Paris and Matt McMahon, we're talking about three teams that didn't make the tournament last year.
Right.
And it's like, I think nowadays in the SEC, pretty much everywhere, the standard is, okay, you weren't a tournament team last year. That's not reason to panic by itself. What are you doing this year?
Don't keep not making it, though.
Yeah. When you find a home near the bottom of the conference standings, I think almost anywhere in the league these days, they're going to react really poorly to that in men's basketball.
All right, we'll get to our first break here of the afternoon. Again, hopefully we'll get a chance to talk to Andy at some point, as he's been there at the shoot-around for Auburn basketball as they get ready for that 9 o'clock. That's at the earliest. It'll be, I'm thinking it's closer to at least 9:15. I think they're listing it now at 9:05. No way. But
they should give away coffee at the beginning of the game, right? That's what they should be.
Something. Red Bull. I don't know. All right. We'll talk to Andy, though, as we continue. Saw that since we're off early today, you got Jake rescheduled?
Yeah, Jake's jumping in on Friday. I will not be here,
right.
so make sure
that'll be good.
That Jake is going to call us in the bottom of the hour number two on Friday.
All right. Right now we'll open up the phone lines. I mean, until we get Andy, we'd love for you to join us. 334-321-1390. That's the Drive Hotline, sponsored by Skybar, as we continue with the Tuesday Drive.
The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck. At ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the Tuesday Drive. Bill and Dan here, and we'd love for you to join us. 334-321-1390. Auburn baseball coming up as the Tigers host the Samford Bulldogs tonight. And that's a ball game you can hear right here on ESPN 106.7. So we'll be off the air early tonight as we get ready for that broadcast. And then 8:30 will be the pregame. And shortly, sometime after 9 o'clock, Andy Bertram, Randall Dickey with the call of Auburn. It's senior night. It is the final regular season home game as Auburn hosts the LSU Tigers tonight in a late night game over at Neville Arena.
Yeah, looking forward to seeing how Auburn responds to the adversity of just a disastrous loss over the weekend for a team trying to regain its footing and prove itself as a team that belongs in the NCAA tournament and finish the season strong. It's a huge final home game of the season for Auburn tonight, and let's check in with the brother we love, Bill. Philly Fanatic is calling in. How you doing, buddy?
Hey, as promised, I have two free tickets to the game tonight, and I'm thinking more and more NIT because I see that it's for mediocre teams with possibly losing records that have big fan bases. Some people call it the no invitational, but I think it works for them because maybe it'll get some younger players some opportunity to continue to practice and play.
You know, both of these teams tonight could be, yes. I mean, LSU is another team. They're 15-14 as well. Matt McMahon probably would not mind an NIT invitation, something to be able to try to, you know, play a little more and just try to build a little bit.
Yeah, the NIT became increasingly unattractive when the portal opened during the postseason because you had players and coaches that probably wanted to focus on next season instead of continuing to play in the NIT, especially when you get out of the major conference teams. The NIT the portal window has moved. The official opening of the portal has moved to after the national championship game in college basketball. Maybe some teams and coaches and players will be more into playing in non-NCAA postseason tournaments because the portal's not opening for a couple of weeks. Like maybe that will impact some decisions. I think as recently as last year, I think teams like Auburn and LSU might have both passed on playing in the NIT because you wanted to start focusing on next year as soon as you could. This year, I don't know. I could see that maybe being a consideration for the teams that end up on the wrong side of the bubble. There's another tournament too, right? There's another big tournament that's sort of taken, you know that's competing for some of this.
I don't remember the name of it. The something college invitational.
Yeah. Is it CBI?
Yeah, maybe. College basketball invitation, maybe. It seems like that. Well, there was a CBI for a while. Is that still the other one? It could be. But anyway, so you've got a pair of tickets. Joe, what do you want us to tell you what we will do then. We'll get to our bottom of the hour break here in a minute. When we do, Dan will get your info, and we will get whoever, so there's someone interested, we'll get them in touch with you so you can get them those tickets, all right?
Let me say something about the future of the Coliseum.
Okay.
I went to a dinner at the president's house with certain retired faculty, and I talked with the provost. The provost is kind of like the vice president or the assistant to the president. Anyway, I brought that up with her. And she says that it's scheduled for demolition, but the problem is it's closely tied to the handicapped basketball team.
Right.
And it would be difficult for them to then close it down without providing another facility.
Another venue,
for
right.
Them. Yeah. So I know my son was handicapped, and whenever he took a course at Auburn, if it wasn't a facility for handicapped, they had to move the course to one that was. So that group that it's a national group, represents handicap. They're pretty strong in having equal opportunity for individuals who, in fact, don't have the same accessibility. But I'm thinking that Auburn will find a place for them, if not build them a little place, and then implode that Coliseum. But they really – I asked her what was in the offing for that facility once it's gone. They haven't made that. I suspect it'll be more classroom space, but no one really knows. Some people floated a parking deck, but
I think it could be both, Joe. It would make sense to be able to try to utilize it for both. There's enough space there.
Yeah. Yep. Okay. Well, I'll root for the Tigers. I've rooted for them for 49 years. I can't give up. They remind me that under the Barbie term, boy, he was just so bad, Tony Barbie.
Oh yeah.
And I hope we don't go there again. But anyway, we'll cheer him on.
All right. Well, hang on, so we can get your number, so we can put somebody in touch with you if they're looking for tickets.
Yeah. Sure.
All right. So we will head to our bottom of the hour break. Speaking of tickets, I have a pair of tickets from Tex to the baseball game this evening. So if you'd like to go see the Auburn-Samford baseball game, I have those tickets, so you can call in and I can transfer them to you if you'd like a pair of tickets for Auburn baseball tonight. Stick with us as we continue here on the Tuesday Drive. Welcome back into the Tuesday Drive. Bill and Dan here at Ticket Central. Now it's like we had a pair of baseball tickets. I'm about to get those transferred to Sylvester. And we have a pair of basketball tickets for tonight's game, courtesy of our friend Philly Fanatic, that we will get you in touch with him so you can get those basketball tickets. So if you'd like basketball tickets, you can give us a call. We've got Sylvester on hold. We'll be getting him taken care of here momentarily. But in the meantime, we're going to get to the Drive hotline, and Slack is up next. Hey, Slack.
What's up, guys?
How you doing, buddy?
Good. You remember about a week or two ago, I said something about NIT?
Yeah, and I wasn't any crazier about it. I'm not any crazier about it now than I was then. Do you think it really would? What good do you think it would do?
I don't know.
This team has practiced plenty, and we've heard how well at times they practiced. I just don't know what this team right now would get out of it.
Slack, I'm glad you called, because I want to ask you what I think is a pretty important question. Like, I think who should be back, and then what do you need, right? Like, those are you there?
Say it again.
Yeah. Who needs to come back, and sort of what do you need in the offseason, right? Like, to me, those are the big questions, and what happens between now and the end of the season isn't gonna could impact that question a little bit, but.
Well, from what I heard, I don't think nobody wants to come back.
And I think it would be disastrous to try to start this with a whole bunch of brand new players. Right, I think continuity.
I think we're not going to have any choice, but we're going to have to start with a whole new, brand new set of players.
I think continuity.
And then I'm going to ask you this question: What went wrong?
I think that if you could do it over again, I wonder if they took too many chances on non-Division I players in the offseason rather than guys with a track record as SEC players or high-level D1 players. And I think they also probably could have I think they maybe could have prioritized defense a little bit more in the portal rather than thinking they were going to need to try to outscore teams and load up on a high flying freewheeling team around Tejad.
Well, it's some teams out there throughout top 20 teams that outscore people, and they don't play defense. Alabama didn't play defense, but they outscore you.
Mm-hmm. Right, I think that's the way they play as well. And I think it's the way you play. I also think it's making the right decisions in the portal as far as finding guys who can play and can fit that style.
Need to have guys that fit, absolutely.
Well, let me ask you this too. I've heard, I'd say, first of all, let me tell you this. If you cut me, I bleed orange and blue. So don't get that wrong. I'm not saying anything that's wrong.
You've been calling the show too long for folks to think
exactly.
That you're
you're
a double agent, right? Like,
right. So my thought is, okay, I'm tired of excuses. If this guy has been a part of this team for 11 or 12 years, I don't think there's an excuse for this team to be playing like it's playing. And it's nobody's fault but his fault.
Okay. He would get the credit, right? If things were going
right,
really
exactly.
Well.
Exactly. If we were winning, he'd get the credit. And the reason I say that is, people tell me, his dad signed these players, but he was part of that recruiting to recruit these guys. So he knew exactly, every one of these guys is on this team, he played a part in signing these guys. So that excuse is out the door. The problem I have is, is you're standing halfway down the baseline, I mean halfway down the sideline, and you're not interacting with your coaches.
You think it's too focused on the court and the referees?
I mean, the only interaction I see with Steven is with his offensive coordinator.
Well, I mean,
somewhere that's got to change, man.
That's interesting, but I mean, Steven's his own defensive coordinator, but you're right. I mean, there's not an awful lot there,
sometimes he will. The only challenge to that I would offer Slack is I know that sometimes I'll see him consulting with Ira, who I believe handles the substitutions, right? So he'll have questions for Ira about, and he'll have suggestions. I think it's a diplomatic way to say it about who needs to go in and who needs to come out. Most of the interaction I do think when you see Steven talking on the sideline, I think most of it's with Burgo. That's fair to say, and a lot of it. And I've had people. And, you know, I think this is one of those things like with Phil Jackson where if your style works, it's your style. And when it's not working, people think it needs to change, right? Like with Steven, it is very focused on communicating from the sideline with players and interacting with the referees a lot. And that's not always, you know, that's not how every coach chooses to do it. But I think that's how Steven thinks he needs to handle it. And if it were... If the team's win-loss record was better, I don't think people would be second-guessing it as much. But when it's not, when the win-loss record's not where it needs to be.
No, you're absolutely right. You look at everything.
Yeah. You know, what Bruce built for 12 years, we shouldn't be in this position. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's honestly what I'm saying.
Losing record in SEC play at home if you lose tonight to LSU. You're 4-5.
You have no way of knowing how things would have gone had anyone, including Bruce, been the head coach. That's why we've said, look, I mean, yes, this year is a tremendous disappointment. But you've got to see, you know, you can't just say, all right, this is it. Because you really don't have anything else to base it on. You've got to see if things get better next year, and they better.
I am a firm believer, Slack, and I would like your thoughts here. I think college basketball, and you could say college football to an extent too, like these are sports where a lot of the work is done before you ever have a practice. A lot of this work is done when you're out building the roster and when you're out figuring out who needs to be potentially part of your 7-man, 8-man, 9-man rotation. My opinion about how the season was going to go didn't change too much when Bruce retired and Steven took over, because I thought for this season, I thought the die was cast because you've already signed the players.
Yeah, you've got your roster.
You've already gotten and got the personnel. And so I can understand, and especially coming off of a season that was so successful a year ago, like I could see the personnel taking the brunt of the blame for this year. If Steven can go find, quote unquote, the right guys and make it work next year, it'll be easier to say that it was just the wrong group of players, the wrong mix, the wrong things were prioritized in the offseason, et cetera. You can say all that stuff. If you keep having to blame the personnel, at some point you stop being the guy who gets to point the finger. And somebody else, if you become the common theme, right? Like, even if it's not your fault, you can't be at the scene of the crime that much, right? Or else you stop getting to be the coach.
To me, it seems like, you remember when Coach Malzahn was here, every year, you going to call plays this year, coach,
right,
or you going to let your offense call? You know what I'm saying? Yep. I hope that road doesn't continue. You know what I'm saying? Like I said, I'm an Auburn guy, and I want us to win ball games. But it's some ball games we should have won this year, and I'm not blaming it on nobody, but I hate coach.
Tell you what, it sounds like Auburn's got a football coach who's found his Nick Marshall, his Cam Newton. You hope Steven can find his.
Right.
Right? You hope
Steven
can go and find his.
But do you think that's going to happen with 10 new guys?
I don't know. Well, I mean, if it's 10, that's going to be really, really tough. It better not be 10. They better have 4 or 5 guys that they can bring back as a core. I saw
especially
a post today, a tweet by, and I forgot, one of the prominent college basketball experts pointing out that the top teams in the country, the top 5 teams in the country, all brought back at least 4 players who played significant minutes a year ago. That it's very difficult for anybody to have a whole new roster and expect it to just gel.
I mean, between Jovich, Williams-Adams, and Freeman, you had three guys that you brought in who had never played Division I basketball before and had multiple years of eligibility. Mm-hmm. I think for and were part of your rotation all year long. I think if all three of those guys weren't back, it would be pretty disappointing, right? When you think about like the thought that you're building for the future.
Right.
Kevin Overton, I know Andy has said on the radio call that Kevin Overton has expressed interest in coming back for his senior year. That's another guy who's been in your rotation all season long. Tahad has multiple years of eligibility remaining. So, yeah, I think if it were a complete restart next year and none of the five underclassmen that are currently in your rotation, if none of them came back, it would be it's absolutely not on schedule, right? It's absolutely not what you were sort of expecting and what you signed up for when you brought that many young players into the program.
Thanks, guys.
Appreciate it, Slack. We need to get to our final break of hour number one and get about 45 more minutes on the show here on this Tuesday.
I think great stuff, as
always,
from Slack. Thoughtful and asking, I think, some of the right questions about the direction of a program.
And, I mean, the thing is, again, I think you have an incomplete as far as a grade. Mm-hmm. It's not a pleasant incomplete right now. But, I mean, it is also a first-year head coach, and we've seen some very successful guys, you know, struggle and have a lot of bumps that first year. But they really made marked improvement in year two, and that's what Auburn needs to see next year. All right, let's get to our final break of hour number one. Come on in and join us here on the Tuesday Drive.
The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck. Or email us at thedrive@espnau.com.
Welcome back into The Drive. Final couple of minutes of hour number one. Let's get right back to The Drive hotline. And Uncle Ollie is up next. What's up, Unc?
Uncle Ollie, you there?
Did we lose him?
Uncle Ollie, you there?
Oh, no.
Should work. All right. All right. Well
hopefully we can.
Calls us back.
Yeah. We've got a couple of minutes or so left here in hour number one. Love your thoughts on. I mean,
what else is going on in the league tonight? We got other SEC,
everything. Yeah. Everybody in the league is playing tonight. That's why there's a 9 o'clock game. As a matter of fact, the games get underway here in just a couple of minutes. You've got Tennessee, South Carolina at 5 o'clock. It's a triple header on the SEC Network. Mm. Tennessee, South Carolina, followed by Mississippi State, Florida, then the Auburn LSU game. So we will see how close to nine that will be. But also at 5:30, Alabama, Georgia on ESPN News.
There's so much basketball.
Well,
around.
Everybody in the league is playing on Tuesday night.
Yeah.
I don't know why.
There's so much.
It's not like it's the last game of the regular season.
You will have, because I guess there's. I mean, there's probably virtual golf on ESPN, right? So they can't
probably.
Go right because everyone else.
You're right.
The SEC Network's got a 5 o'clock game. ESPNU's got a 6 o'clock game. ESPN2's got a 6 o'clock game. And Vanderbilt Ole Miss is going to the plus.
Yeah.
Tonight, right? I mean, it's. I mean, there's basketball
crazy.
All over. And Auburn LSU, a 9 o'clock
They get
start
to be the wrap-up, the final game
on
of
SEC
the night.
Network.
Yep. So it's going to be a busy night.
Vanderbilt's got to be thinking, how did LSU-Auburn get television?
Really? Because it was scheduled. It's been scheduled for a while.
Vanderbilt said we're in the top
20. We're ranked. Yeah, no kidding.
We're playing on the website.
And that is crazy. But I do wonder what's going on tomorrow that there were no games scheduled for Wednesday night.
I wonder if it's got to be because of the tournament coming up. I wonder if they wanted to.
But everybody plays Saturday. I mean, you know,
Texas Arkansas is tomorrow.
Oh, okay. I was thinking everybody played tonight. No, okay.
But you're right. Everyone's got a Tuesday Saturday.
So 14 of the 16 teams play tonight. I knew there were a ton of games. I was thinking it was everybody, but that's odd.
I wonder if there's Pascal would probably know if there's like a more, you know, a non ESPN related reason for this. I don't know what ESPN would potentially have scheduled tomorrow all over the, or is our conference tournaments starting? Maybe it's coverage of the women's tournament, Bill. that would
I bet that's it.
Coverage of the women's tournament all over the ESPN family of networks, you know.
Yeah, that makes sense since you know, and Auburn's playing tomorrow as well. Well, because it is first day. That's exactly what it is. All right, we're going to talk with Andy Burcham, voice of the Tigers, when we come back.
Got a little detective.
Yeah,
in here, right?
Yeah, that's right. Well, it's like got to be something. All right, we're halfway. We're more than halfway done. We're halfway done with our normal show, but we've only got a couple of more segments left. First one with Andy Burcham when we come back here on the Tuesday Drive.
I'm running. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. And online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome in to hour number two of the Tuesday Drive. Bill and Dan here in the studio on what will be an abbreviated edition of the Drive because we have Auburn University baseball coming up here on ESPN 106.7 with the airtime 5:45 there. So we'll be off a little before that. And the reason, of course, that there is baseball on ESPN 106.7 is because there will be basketball on Wings 94.3 tonight, starting at 8:30 with the pregame, and sometime, hopefully shortly after 9 o'clock, will be the tip for Auburn-LSU. Final regular season home game for the Tigers. It is senior night for Auburn tonight, as Auburn looking to bounce back from a very disturbing loss the other night. LSU's trying to do the same thing. LSU had just beaten Ole Miss. And they were beaten handily by Oklahoma over the weekend as well. So both teams coming off losses, both teams 15-14, and Auburn, if they're to keep any hopes alive of making the NCAA tournament, they absolutely cannot afford to lose tonight in that late night matchup against LSU. And speaking of that matchup, The voice of the Tigers joining us now here on the Tuesday Drive. Andy Burcham's been watching a little of the practice, the shoot around for the Tigers as they get ready for those other Tigers from Baton Rouge, joining us here on the Tuesday Drive. Andy, how you doing?
Bill, Dan, I'm doing very well. Glad to be with you today. Auburn just finished its shoot around and activity getting ready for tonight's 9 o'clock. 9 o'clock tonight.
Yeah, tell me about it. Hey, at least everybody doesn't have to get up early in the morning. 9 o'clock is ridiculous, and that's being optimistic, Andy. You know it's not going to be a 9 o'clock tip.
No,
it's not going to be 9:05.
No.
It'll be lucky if it's 9:15.
No, when we are in our pregame meetings with Jacob Hillman and Brad Law, especially these late games, I mean we're extending interviews because we know that the later you get, the less likely it is that you'll start on time. So I expect that we'll get the slide indication for tonight's ball game, and we'll be on later than the 9:05 that we that's the minimum tonight. I believe in the over tonight for as far as the starting time for this one this evening.
Andy, there's no question that it's more fun this time of year when your team is surging into the postseason, and Auburn's experienced that the last few years. I still feel like Andy Williams, right? You know, it's still the most wonderful time of the year when you're talking about, like, once February turns into March, these games become so high stakes and you get so many of them throughout the day in different parts of the country, and the SEC women's tournament starting tomorrow, the men's basketball tournament next week, and then we're a little more than about 10 days away from Selection Sunday. Like this is, and you've experienced, you've been on both sides of the bubble, right, in the basketball postseason in your career, but this there's something really special about this time of year.
By the way, that's my favorite non-sacred Christmas song.
Oh, it's
Andy Williams is the most wonderful time. It's my favorite.
Well, he how was about the, that? Good, he was good, the king. Good job, Dan. Because I was wondering, are you talking Moon River?
Well,
or,
he's the king of Branson, right? And that's I mean, Andy.
Here's a story for you. And Branson was someplace that we went as kids all the time in the summer, Silver Dollar City and all that. And a couple years back, we went back to Branson for my folks' 50th wedding anniversary. Mm-hmm. The whole family showed up, and we were fishing on Lake Kennecomo for trout. And the guide that we were with said, "Hey, there's Andy Williams' house up there, up on a bluff." So this is before he had passed away.
Sure,
I never made it to his theater, but he's one of my all time. And it's called Andy Williams Christmas. I know, inventive, isn't it? But it is a fabulous album during the Christmas time. But back to what you were talking about, Dan. This is an exciting time. And as tough as it has gotten for Auburn with regard to where it is in the tournament, this is a fun time of the year, and it's fun to look at the possibilities. For Auburn, it's dire straits for the Tigers tonight. There's no question about that. They've put themselves in a very, very very precarious situation, especially with the losses to Oklahoma last week and Ole Miss. And Auburn's got to make some ground up to be back in the conversation with regard to the NCAA tournament. But here's the thing:
they got to move those refrigerators, right?
This ball club has the talent to do it.
You're right,
but they cannot waste any more time in doing so.
No, and that's where, you know, the loss the other night was just so disappointing, and I was really surprised. I mean, Steven seemed genuinely, he seemed genuinely excited about the practices that they'd had leading up to it, and you could just tell from the outset something wasn't right. It just they just didn't seem to be, you know, all on the same page or in step with each other.
Well, and there were segments of that game where we saw that Auburn team that went to Ole Miss and won, and went to Florida and won, and beat Texas earlier this season in the SEC. We saw that team in glimpses in both the first and the second halves, but it wasn't a sustainable time for Auburn. And when Auburn went on those 8-0 runs, it didn't sustain that after that. The game changed dramatically. For Auburn. I mean, an example is the end of the first half. Auburn goes on a run and gets the lead, and then, you know, goes about the last 3 or 4 minutes of the first half and doesn't score. And I'm just scratching my head, because I know this ball club has the talent. I mean, this is the same team that took Houston down to the final buzzer and played the last 4 minutes without Keyshawn Hall, that went to Vegas and beat Oregon, and then beat a surging now St. John's team out in Las Vegas, and beat Arkansas by 23 here, and beat Kentucky, and beat Texas, and then won those games at Ole Miss and at Florida. So we've seen that team for Auburn. I think that's what is baffling, is because we've seen how well this ball club can play, but it has not done that of late. And it's done that at the toughest time of the season, when all the eyes are on, there's people out there looking for any reason at all to take Auburn off the bubble. Well, Auburn has done that to itself for these last couple ball games.
Andy, I feel like there's unique pressure. I mean, there's pressure all over the rotation in this final week of the season when your postseason situation is this precarious. But I'd say for the two seniors, Keyshawn Hall and Keyshawn Murphy, it was, I think February was too turbulent, I think, for both of them, right? When you think about, you know, there were disciplinary issues, there were some of their toughest performances of the season. They also, you know, both of them had really strong games in February. You talk about, like, this is the same team that accomplished all of these things. These are the same players who accomplished these remarkable things during the year. You'd love to see them play some of their best basketball the final week of the season, starting tonight against LSU.
Well, I mean, Keyshawn Hall, or excuse me, Keyshawn Murphy, in a two out of three game stretch, set career highs of 22 and 25 points. And Keyshawn Hall has been Auburn's scorer all season long. And, you know, he has a dramatic shot to set Auburn's record for most free throws in a season set by the legendary John Mengelt back in the early 1970s, his 208. I mean, John was first and second mm-hmm. on Auburn's single season free throws list coming into this season. And now Keyshawn Hall is within shouting distance. He has 202. I mean, he's going to break it. He may break it tonight.
Oh, yeah.
He's just six to tie and seven to set the Auburn single season record.
When you're breaking the Mengelt records, that's pretty impressive. Like those.
It is. And here's the thing. And here's a couple stats for both of these guys as well. Keyshawn Murphy has played in the NCAA tournament. He has never won a game mm-hmm. in the NCAA tournament. Keyshawn Hall has never played in an NCAA mm-hmm. tournament
right.
game. And both of those are on the table for both of those guys. And yet Auburn is struggling down the stretch of this season. To me, that would make this a desperate situation for those two. I'd be ashamed if those two guys both missed the NCAA tournament in their senior years. They're both going to be honored tonight, along with Reed Trapp and C.J. Williams in pregame ceremonies. Several of the Auburn managers and support staff will be honored tonight as well. So there will be some emotion going into this ball game. I talked to all of the seniors before the shoot around. They've all got family, obviously, coming in to be with them on their senior day, or their senior night, senior late night, as it turns out tonight. But all of those guys, I'd hate for both of those guys not to get those opportunities. One for Keyshawn Hall to get to the NCAA tournament and Keyshawn Murphy to win a game, at least to win a game in the NCAA tournament.
Yeah, and to your point about some of the inconsistencies, you mentioned that Murph had career highs in two of those games. In the two games immediately following, he had four
right.
and 2 points.
Right.
And that's the concern.
We knew that he did not get the start on Saturday, was late getting to the shoot around, and I think it was an honest mistake. But, you know, Steven has – that's a line that he has drawn in the sand. You're late, you don't start. And he did not have a good game for Auburn and did not have a good game for Auburn against Oklahoma. And that was coming off of a 25-point mm-hmm. game in Auburn's win against Kentucky. So a great deal to play for this team, but it has put itself in a situation, as we all know, that it's got to make a run now to get back into the NCAA tournament mixture.
LSU coming in tonight. Matt McMahon's team has a couple. I mean, they've got a few guys that can light you up, and that's something. Boy, that's something that this year has probably been the biggest problem that I can recall in Auburn stopping the top player, the top scorer on the other team. It seems like those guys, you know, for years, Auburn would do a great job of really handling that top scorer. This year, it's been a big problem. The top scorers on other teams have had really, really good ball games throughout the season.
It didn't hurt the last 2 years to have a guy like Denver Jones on the perimeter, who was just a fabulous on-ball defender for Auburn, and a guy that got better at defense, as did Miles Kelly for Auburn. This year, though, and I think it's magnified just because of what we have seen against, I don't think I've seen a better year, at least since I've been doing it, since I took over for Rod, in my 7 years, of a better year of shooting guards in the Southeastern Conference across the board than what we see this year. And tonight for LSU, that guy is Max McKinnon,
mm-hmm.
a senior out of Brisbane, Australia, 6'6", 62 threes on the season. You want him to shoot over you. Auburn needs to be physical with him, make him go vertical in tonight's ball game. But this is a guy that has 23 double-figure scoring games this year and is coming off of their double overtime win in the midweek last week was at Ole Miss, and he scored 34 that night. So this guy can fill it up, and we've seen too many of those guys fill it up against Auburn here in the last month and a half.
You're absolutely right, Andy. And I'm hoping we had a couple of people call in yesterday, and we've been able to help some folks out that had extra tickets for tonight. I'm hoping that folks too. That have tickets and can't go tonight can try to find somebody that can.
I understand what you're saying, Bill, and I'm a little bit worried about what the crowd's going to be like tonight. I think we will get a good crossover crowd that starts at Plainsman Park and comes to Neville Arena tonight. Mm-hmm. The timing on that should be pretty good with this really late start. If there's one benefit to a 9 o'clock start, it's the 6 o'clock baseball start. Folks ought to be able to do both here tonight. But I do hope that it is a sellout. I mean, it will be Auburn's 85th consecutive sellout. I just hope that in spite of the fact that it's a 9 o'clock game and in spite of the fact that this team has struggled down the stretch, I have faith that that Auburn family will be here en masse tonight for this late night ball game.
Andy, love to get a couple of thoughts before we let you go on baseball. Yeah. Really an outstanding start for this team. Early on, we continue to be wowed by the starting pitching for sure, but the bats have really come around here lately.
And it continues to be a lot of the young guys too.
Oh yes,
it's not just the veterans, and I consider the sophomores like a Bub Terrell and Chris Rembert and Chase Frelick among those veterans, considering the amount of games that they played as true freshmen year ago. But the McCranes are just they're a blast to watch. I was talking with Butch Thompson today for his weekly This Week in Auburn Baseball, and Bill, this is my 32nd year of Auburn baseball, and you go back a lot further than I do regarding Auburn baseball and calling games. Do you remember brothers that started every game together?
No.
Like the McCranes are doing right now?
No, I do not. That's
I don't either. I mean, there haven't been that many brothers, let alone guys that are everyday players.
Yeah, you had the fellas.
The fellas from
a couple years
McCrane
ago, right?
Pitch, the, too, yeah. By the way.
He's like
Bingaman. I think we're going to see McCrane pitch at some point.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that as well.
You recently had the pair of brothers, right? But only one of them was on the field a ton, right? The other one was from Birmingham Southern.
And he was the first base coach, and his brother was the Friday night starter.
Mm-hmm. Right. But
they weren't everyday guys like that.
No, I mean it is. It's been so striking because I think returning production was a big reason why Auburn was as highly touted as they were in the preseason.
And now you're putting up, consecutive Freshman of the Week award winners.
Their ability to go identify guys that make sense, and I know that some of them were highly recruited and other programs wanted them a lot too.
Mm-hmm.
But Auburn's ability to go find guys that fit as immediate contributors, it was remarkable last year, and you thought maybe you wouldn't see as much of it because you returned a ton of production. It's remarkable this year too.
Here's a couple factors that have gone in Auburn's favor of late. Since COVID, the Major League Baseball draft has been cut in half,
mm-hmm,
as far as the number of rounds. And the recent – Auburn is on par now with a lot of other schools in this league with regard to scholarship dollars. Because Auburn it's a full scholarship sport now.
Right.
And that – before it was – it was 11 point whatever scholarships.
11.7.
And Auburn didn't have the Hope Scholarship to supplement that, like Georgia does, or the at-need scholarships that Vanderbilt does, or scholarship money in Florida, like Florida, or in Louisiana, like LSU has. Auburn was always one of those that was putting things, piecing it together. Well, they don't have to do that anymore. And you add to what this stadium has become now and the success that Butch Thompson has brought to this program consistently, and now you start to get the scholarships that this is two straight years now, and I think all of these factors play into this, that Auburn's had a fabulous recruiting class, Bill and Dan, and didn't lose a one guy to the draft this last summer.
It is a lot more attractive these days to be in college and have lived the college life than it is to be bouncing around on in minor league stadiums and living that life.
I agree. And I think all of that factors in to these last two recruiting classes, and this next one is eye-popping if you see what Frank Thomas's son is doing right now and others. Mm-hmm. It's eye-popping what Carl Nonnemaker has done as the recruiting coordinator, putting all of this together, and this coaching staff and what this program has become. It's a fabulous time to be to have a season ticket to come out each and every game and watch this Auburn baseball team play. You guys, I guess you guys get a little time off today, don't you? 5:45.
Yeah.
Brad and Jason with the call today right here on the ESPN 106.7.
Yep, we're done here pretty shortly. I know we're running a little behind.
And as a matter of fact, Andy, if Coach Vickers can go on a roll, we're off tomorrow for the women's game on ESPN 106.7, and we're back Thursday if Auburn is eliminated by Texas A&M.
So we hope we're not back Thursday.
You talk about Coach Vickers. I think this next recruiting class is a key mm-hmm. for him. I mean, he lost just about everybody. When he came in and has put together a ball club, and I know it's where they've had some very tough games, but I think from what I'm hearing about this next recruiting class, watch out. I think he's going to be able to turn things around for Auburn, and I look forward to seeing what Larry Vickers can do with the Auburn women's basketball program.
I think for both Coach Vickers and I would say Team Malvo as well. It's like if you can get competitive in this SEC. It's a really, really impressive it's an impressive feat when you think about how many of the teams are consistent contenders.
Well, and one of those Malvos will be at the next Olympic Games. Chris Malvo's been added to the Olympic coaching staff for the United States.
That's very, very impressive there. Andy, Andy, fill us in on everything that's going on with the Auburn Sports Network here as we wind things down.
This week, we have Tiger Talk Thursday night, by the way, out at Baumhauer's Victory Grill, 6 o'clock on Wings 94.3. Stephen Pearl and Alex Golish on Tiger Talk Thursday night. Mm-hmm. So we'll get a preview for Coach Golish or from Coach Golish as they get ready to start spring practice. This week's Talking Tigers podcast with Rob McGann and Tara McQueen. They're the newest members of the Auburn soccer coaching staff. Coming up Monday, Jairus McIntyre. Former Auburn wide receiver, his father, of course, Cedric McIntyre, an outstanding tailback back in the 70s. Jairus is now back as Auburn's director of football and alumni and high school relations at Auburn. We're working on some of the other behind-the-scenes staff members of that Auburn football program in the coming weeks on the Talking Tigers podcast. Baseball here in just a matter of moments against Sanford. And then this weekend, both the Auburn softball opens SEC play against Kentucky at J.B. Moore Field. Baseball closes out the non-part of its weekend schedule with Winthrop in town, 6 o'clock, and 1 o'clock on Sunday. So busy time, but a great time to be a part of Auburn athletics. And we're very, very busy, but happy to be really busy on the Auburn Sports Network.
Oh, absolutely. Andy, thanks a lot. Really appreciate you spending a little time with us. Have a great broadcast tonight.
My pleasure, guys. Have a great one. Take care. War Eagle.
Voice of the Tigers, Andy Burcham, joining us as he does Tuesdays. Usually he's with us in the first hour, but since it was the 9 o'clock game, they were still having a shoot around, and he was able to watch that before he came on with us. We need to get to break. Stick with us here on the Tuesday Drive.
War Eagle, this is Coach Larry Vickers, and you're listening to ESPN 106.7.
Baseball coming up right here on ESPN 106.7. Auburn and Samford, I was going to look. I have not checked. Let me see if I can check and get the starting lineup so we can figure exactly who all is in there for the Tigers. We'll try to do that. But, again, we've got Auburn baseball coming up on ESPN 106.7. Because of basketball immediately following.
Would you like the starting lineup for tonight's game?
Yeah.
All right, so Alvarez pitching, as you speculated. Mm-hmm. Leading off in center field, Bristol Carter.
He has really been a great table setter there at the top of the lineup.
Batting second, the catcher, Chase Frelick. Mm-hmm. Bub Terrell is in left, batting third. Guevara, the shortstop at cleanup tonight.
I could see Guevara sticking it short just because you feel like you have so many third base options. You feel like he can play it. And to have that bat as your shortstop.
It's not like he's a liability at shortstop either.
To have a middle infield hitting like your cleanup hitter, Eric Guevara, and your number five hitter tonight, Chris Rembert. And having some, you know, and
is
having a
Bingaman back at cleanup, or have they changed it a little?
Bingaman is, well, I'll get to Bingaman in just a second. Guevara, cleanup.
Oh, no, Guevara's cleanup. Okay, you said that's right.
Rembert's fifth. Five. Mason McCrane is your DH.
Moving on up, and rightfully so, he has really been hot.
Something we speculated about, Mason McCrane batting sixth, the DH. His brother, Brandon, playing third base, batting seventh.
And batting seventh and hitting around .500.
We wondered about Cade Ballou. He's your right fielder batting eighth. And how about Ethan Bingaman, the first baseman, batting ninth tonight? That's decent.
I got a guy who has been SEC Freshman of the Week. He's already hit a couple of bombs. Yeah, that's how dangerous this lineup is, top to bottom.
A 7-8-9 of Brandon McCrane, Cade Ballou, Ethan Bingaman is the bottom of the line. I mean, pitchers don't get a break.
No, they really don't.
The bottom third of your lineup.
And you've got some options that can come off the bench tonight as well. I mean, whoever you have in that starting lineup, you've got three or four guys that are scary coming off the bench.
That's also three true freshmen. Yes. In your starting nine?
Well, actually, Brandon's a redshirt.
Oh, that's
freshman.
True. But three freshmen,
right?
In your starting lineup, and that could
freshmen and three sophomores.
How about this? That could be your lineup at Missouri on Friday night. Maybe not Alvarez pitching, but those nine guys. That could be what your starting lineup looks like when you go to Missouri to start SEC play in a little more than a week. And that's a very impressive. And that's a group of guys that a lot of those guys can come back for 2027 if they want.
Oh, you're right. So, I mean, the future is, the present is very bright, but the future continues to be very bright for Auburn baseball. We're going to get to our bottom of the hour break, back to wrap things up here on the Tuesday Drive. Wrapping things up here on the Tuesday edition of The Drive. Yes, our time is just about up because we've got some obligations before we get into Auburn baseball here on ESPN 106.7.
How about this? If you missed any of Andy Burcham, we'll have the podcast uploaded shortly. You're going to want to check out the podcast. Great stuff from our pal, the voice of the Auburn Tigers, Andy Burcham.
Yeah, our thanks to Andy for joining us. Again, Auburn baseball is coming up next. And then, of course, a little later on over on Wings 94.3, the airtime, 8:30, tip shortly after 9 o'clock. We won't be back tomorrow because of Auburn women's basketball, but we'll talk to you next time about everything that has gone on between now and then. That's going to do it for today.
How you feeling about tonight, Bill?
I don't know. I just don't know. Which set of Tigers am I going to see from either side? They've got to win it. Got to win it if they're going to have any chance. All right. We'll discuss it the next time. Until then, have a good one, everybody. We are out of here.